and the conflict that ensued with the Zionist regime. In this edition of the Spotlight, we will look at how not dealing with the Palestinian-Israeli conflict has resulted in what we are witnessing today, another ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians in the making with the help of the U.S. First, let me introduce our guest. Chris Williamson, host of Palestine Declassified, joins us from Derby in the U.K. Daniel Yegish, author and researcher, joins us from Beirut. Welcome to you both. Chris Williamson, I'll first start with you. When you take a look at this Balfour Declaration, perhaps you can give us a brief, historical perspective on that. But what I'm looking at back then is the Jews constituted less than 10% of the population at that time. What they wanted to do was they wanted to facilitate the immigration of these European Jews between 1992 and 1935. You then have the population that rose from 9% to nearly 27% of the total population. Of course, what you think about the importance as to the way that Balfour Declaration is really what has set forward what we're witnessing today in terms of the uprooting of the Palestinians from their land.
His hands are soaked in blood, and the decision that was taken, or the announcement that was made in the Balfour Declaration, I mean, they had morally no right to make such a declaration. I mean, one people giving the land of another people to a third set of people. I mean, it completely unacceptable. And of course, everything flows from that. Interesting, though, of course, one of the things that also was said in the Balfour Declaration, that nothing shall be done that may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine, and that certainly hasn't been upheld in the intervening years. So, yeah, I mean, I think Britain is morally responsible for what's happening right now, and they're doubling down, aren't they? We're seeing the government and the opposition parties throwing their full support behind the genocide of the Palestinian people in Gaza. It's a shocking state of affairs, and you know, I think many British people feel ashamed of our country right now, and that's why increasing numbers of people are expressing their solidarity, unprecedented numbers indeed of people are showing their solidarity with the Palestinian people on the streets of London and most towns and cities throughout the land.
Indeed. Well, Daniel Yegish, when you want to take a look at this Balfour Declaration, what it did was displaced and forcibly uprooted Palestinians. The homes were destroyed, and there's a lot of horrific stories that can be traced back to that time of what Palestinians had to experience. And is it fair to make a comparison to what is happening today, especially with the news that Israel and the U.S. Have planned a forcible displacement, which is against international law, of Palestinians from the Gaza Strip into, again, this is something that they haven't come out and acknowledged that they will do, but it's on the drawing board, it appears. Palestinians in the Gaza Strip to go to Egypt, the ones in the occupied territories to go to Jordan, which again is a forced displacement. Is it fair to make a comparison in that way?
Yes, I do think it's fair, and I also think we look at the Balfour Declaration as one of the documents in a continuity of Western, of different forms of Western, in this case British violence against the indigenous Palestinian people. And the Balfour Declaration in particular didn't even mention Palestinians. It referred to them as non-Jewish people or population. So again, here we can see how Palestinians have been dehumanized early on. But it didn't even start with the Balfour Declaration. The early writings of Zionism already, from if we go back to the end of the 19th century, look at Palestinians, or if we want to speak in settler colonial terms, at the indigenous people as people who do not belong to this land, as people who are less than human, or not even as people at all. So the dehumanization of Palestinians and identifying the settlers as the owners of the land is obviously something that is constitutive to Zionism and stretches throughout its history. So the ongoing genocide of Gaza that is taking place today is a result of these of over a century of settler colonial violence on the indigenous people, with its goal being obviously for the settlers to take the land of the indigenous people, and in all of which the what is now recognized by much of the world as the state of Israel has constructed its entire identity and narrative on the expulsion of the indigenous people. So the genocide that is unfolding right now, in fact, did not start on October 7, when this current escalation and the bombardments and massacres of thousands of Palestinians are taking place, but it's actually inscribed into the ideology of Zionism, which requires the killing and the destruction of the indigenous land and the indigenous people in order for Zionism to unfold.
The stats that has come out, Chris Williamson, about the instances that are occurring in the occupied territories in terms of the settlers acting against the Palestinians are very alarming, because the rate has increased based on one particular tally, which the UN agency OCHA actually cited a few days back. You're looking at 15 communities, Palestinians, that at least 98 households comprising of 828 Palestinians, including 313 children, have been displaced based on this settler violence. Settler violence is not anything new, but it seems like obviously this is now what they are perceiving to be an opportune time for them to go after Palestinians in the form and manner that they are. What are we looking at there? Is that something that I'm guessing maybe perhaps is being done in conjunction with Israeli officials, people like Itamar Ben-Gvir?
Well, indeed it is. And we've often seen, haven't we, examples where the illegal settlers are being accompanied by Israeli military personnel in their pogroms against the Palestinian people. And you know, the level of intimidation and violence and murder is completely out of control, far worse than we've seen for a very long time now. And you know, the way in which the Israeli settlers act is that they kind of act as if, you know, with impunity, really, and aided and abetted, as I've said, by the Israeli security services, stepping up the number of arrests. I think I saw some figures earlier today. I think there's around 2,000 people now in administrative detention. These are people who were just rounded up, basically taken hostage. No due process, no trial, no charges. And people are just thrown in these Israeli dungeons. It's a shocking state of affairs. And the number of injuries is huge. Well over 2,000 people have been injured. 132 people have been killed in the West Bank. And as you say, you know, well over 1,000 people displaced. You know, this is going on in conjunction with the genocide that's taking place in Gaza right now. And what sickens me, I've got to say, is the compliance, really, the connivance, frankly, of the Western powers. And you know, it seems to me that, you know, maybe part of the agenda here is to gain access to the rich pickings, you know, in the sea off the Gaza coast. I understand that the Zionist entity has issued some gas exploration licenses to fossil fuel companies, and you know, it seems that there is a desire to essentially evacuate the entire area of Gaza. And indeed, there was a think tank linked to the Likud party, linked to Benjamin Netanyahu, that actually recently prepared a report, you know, effectively talking about a final solution for the Palestinian question. In other words, as I say, to basically, you know, kill and expel the entire population of Gaza. I believe that, you know, the United States are complicit in this, and talking about if the, you know, the Egyptian authorities were to accept people from Gaza, there's some talk about them, you know, well, Israel, you know, paying for the cost of that, and the United States wiping out Egypt's debt if they were to do so. I think the Egyptian authorities will be reluctant, notwithstanding the inducements, because the support of people, you know, on the ground for the Palestinian people, you know, in the region is, well, indeed around the world, but particularly in the region. And, you know, I'm not sure that if they went down that track, they, you know, they would be able to hold that line. I suspect, you know, there would be, you know, people even in the military who would not tolerate that. But there are lots of messages apparently going out now from the Egyptian authorities to the military, urging them to, you know, be calm, not get involved, etc., and so on. So yeah, it's a real terrible state of affairs, and you know, the Western powers have a lot to answer for in their complicity with what's going on right now.
Indeed, and those are interesting points that you make there, which I've heard on more than one occasion now. But let's focus on where you're at, Daniel Yeges, in Beirut, where I'm sure people are very, very anxious to hear what the Hezbollah Secretary General has to say tomorrow. I'm sure that they are either going to attend or watch and to see what is going to be said. I mean, I've seen a couple of the teasers, and I'm sure they have meanings in it. Maybe you can tell us. But today, for the first time, two drones were used, these attack drones by Hezbollah, which targeted Israeli positions on the border. We also know that for the first time, all Israeli sites on the southern border were targeted by the resistance fighters. Tell us what you think may happen. I know it's speculation, but you know, since you're there, perhaps you can give us a better idea of this.
Yeah, it's difficult to speculate, difficult to predict what is going to happen, but obviously there is anticipation for the speech that is scheduled for tomorrow, because it could have a lot of implications on how the situation is going to further unfold. But of course, we're currently almost 4 weeks into this war, and it's interesting to see how from the military side, it is different in many ways of the previous confrontations, and Hezbollah obviously continues to play a major role in the deterrence against the Zionist regime, which is one could argue also weakened internally to an extent where it isn't able to fight a war on two fronts if we look at the current situation. However, of course, it is very difficult to speculate what the outcome of the speech will be, because it is an unprecedented situation for many people here and in the region, and a very uncertain situation as well.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Taking a look at the particular statement of genocide there, and I'm bringing this up because it needs to be discussed, Chris Williamson. UN has come out on saying that Palestinians face a risk of genocide. You know, this word has been echoed by several either leaders or politicians. Even the Iranian foreign minister has said that on more than one occasion. And I'm going to put that next to the fact that you have over the course of this October 7th till now, 25,000 tons worth of explosives have been dropped on the territory. And the comparison has been made to the atomic bomb, I guess, that was dropped by the U.S. Of course, these bombs are made in the USA. And therefore, this whole complicity, which, by the way, I'm sure you're well aware, U.S. itself has a law by the name of the Lee Act, which doesn't allow the sale or assistance militarily to regimes that drop bombs on a civilian population, just like the way that Israel is doing. Doesn't that really put into perspective, or should I say shows how the U.S. is complicit really in a large degree when it comes to this war?
Well, the U.S. just turns a blind eye when it suits it to do so. Quite clearly, the Zionist entity is in breach of that directive that you mentioned there. As we know, it's in breach of international law, but they just seem to have carte blanche to do as they wish. I mean, if you know, if the international law meant anything to these Western powers, then they would be bringing pressure to bear on Israel. And look, and you know, Israel couldn't survive were it not for the support of the United States with its huge subsidy that it provides to Israel on an annual basis, and you know, talk of even increasing that, and you know, the support that they are providing in terms of the military hardware that you mentioned, the fact that they've actually floated two aircraft carriers into the Mediterranean also tells you a story, doesn't it? But you know, it seems to me that the whole question really is about the, as it were, strategic interests of the United States, and you know, they use Israel to further United States interests, and I've already mentioned the licenses to explore for gas reserves in the Mediterranean off the Gaza coast. And a bit like the NATO proxy war in Ukraine, you know, in the end, a lot of this often comes down to the whole question of fossil fuels and the, you know, the fossil fuel industry. And I think, though, that the public opinion in the United States is certainly turning increasingly in support of the Palestinian people and against the Israeli regime. You've even got senators now and members of the House of Representatives, you know, actually openly criticizing AIPAC, you know, the Israeli lobby, which is incredibly powerful in the US. And, you know, politicians have always been fearful of speaking out and criticizing Israel, and certainly not criticizing AIPAC because of the potential repercussions. But, you know, people are now, some of these politicians who've been lily livid in the past are now speaking out. So, you know, opinion is changing. Whilst it's true that the leaders who hold the levers to power at the moment are very much still in the pocket of the Zionist entity, you know, public opinion around the Western world is changing. And even some of the politicians lower down the food chain, as it were, are flexing their muscles to some extent. And, you know, things, I think, are changing in terms of, you know, where politics is heading in terms of this question in the West. But, of course, you know, on the ground, the resistance is very, very well prepared. And I think, you know, will take its destiny into its own hands in the coming weeks.
Well, I'd like to find out how much they are changing, Daniel Yejish. We're looking at some of the political costs that are showing itself. One of the ones are Bahrain announcing the Israeli ambassador to have left the country, and that there has been a halt now to economic relations between Bahrain and Israel. We're also looking at how Bolivia has cut off diplomatic relations. But in the bigger picture, we're looking at how this whole image of Israel, as controversial maybe, to lack of a better word, that it was, it's really lost somewhat of its legitimacy on the world stage. The protests obviously show that. Our guests there just talked about how politicians are more sympathetic towards now the Palestinian cause. But how much of an impact and damage has Israel suffered, and how much more is Israel risking to damage its, whatever's left of its reputation or image by continuing this war?
So the question here also is who Israel's audience is. And it's a very good observation, of course, that Israel's public image has suffered to some extent. But of course, if we look at the support that Israel gets and we look at where it gets the support from, that's not necessarily based on any rational, ethical, or moral implications. The Israeli regime is supported by the governments of the European Union, of the United States, and other governments that emerge as settler colonies, including Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and their close allies, which represent basically not the majority of the world, but which have obviously a overproportional power on the international stage in the so-called international community. And obviously, given that the United States is in the UN Security Council, the Israeli regime, to some extent, has sort of a veto of power. So even before this current escalation and the genocide that we're seeing, happening now, the Israeli regime was upheld by political elites, not necessarily by people around the world. So it is, of course, a shift to some extent to see that even though the Israeli regime has been investing so much money and efforts into its public diplomacy and different forms of propaganda to target in particular Western audiences, to identify itself as a victim, to identify itself as a so-called democracy, the only democracy in the Middle East, and to keep on recycling those Orientalist and very racist anti-Palestinian and anti-indigenous language and basically fantasies and myths. At the same time, those who support the Israeli regime at this point do so for various reasons that might be anti-indigenous and racist. And we see that obviously in the discourse that is peddled by the political elites in the European Union that keep on euphemizing genocide into what they refer to as self-defense, that keep on using the same discourse about alleged terrorism that has been copy-pasted now for years, if not decades. But the question really is about the power relations. And even if we see hundreds of thousands of people in the streets, it is a structural problem in the end, because even at this point, it is the United States, it is Washington, that could put an end to these Israeli crimes if it withdrew its support. So what I want to say is that there are imbalances in power that keep the Israeli regime alive, and also, of course, with it being a proxy and a colonial outpost of the Euro-American sphere.
All right. Thank you so much. We are fortunately out of time. Chris Williamson, host of Palestine Declassified, Daniel Yejich, author and researcher from Beirut. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. Thanks for being with us. And I thank the team also. For now, it's goodbye.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Back to Reality. This is Asma. I have the honor to be your host once more, and here with me I have Sister Bita and Brother Mustafa. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Yeah, of course, the pleasure is all ours. And then, as the ritual of this program goes, please introduce yourself very briefly.
Sure. My name is Sayyid Mustafa, and I've lived in different parts of the world, but I'm originally from Pakistan. Mm-hmm. And I'm a student here in Qom, and I'm studying psychology here in Hausa.
Yeah, that's great.
And it comes to me. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, our dear listeners, and my dear host and dear brother here. It's an honor for me to be here again at Back to Reality. I am Bita, and I'm studying at one of the Tehran's university, and I'm studying medicine, by the way, and an honor for me to be here.
So wish both of you luck and success.
Thank you.
And happy for you to be here. There is this word that is war, and it has got too much of things to connote to. And that is so sad when we think of war. And it's even more sad when you think of the very fact that, okay, it's the 21st century, and still there are some wars in this world. In the world that we feel like science is so much improved and developed, in the world in which people are studying, the means of education are too much, in the world in which people can talk to each other, in the world in which people can be kinder to each other because they know many things. They are not like the primitive people. They can no longer say that I don't have any idea about this or that fact. No, they are all aware of the things that is happening around them, but still, there's war. Why?
Well, I would challenge the assumption that you just made, that people know what's going on around them. Mm-hmm. I don't think actually people necessarily know always what's going on around them. Because there's so much propaganda in the world that people are misled by that propaganda, right?
Yeah.
Whenever there's a war, there's always two sides to it. Each side thinks they're the right ones.
Exactly.
They're accusing the other ones. So that's one big part of it. It's just there's a lot of propaganda and ignorance mixed together, which causes like so much confusion and so much conflict.
You know what I say when I say that everybody knows everything? I always say that about religion, for example. When I say people, they have, because we have been asked to search about different religions and then pick the best one. So when they say that, okay, there are other people from different religion, and I say, okay, how they could stay ignorant toward a thing which is talked about too much? Just as you were saying, there are two sides.
Yeah.
Okay, there are words about two sides that have been getting viral nowadays. So we know, actually, we can at least have a hint about which one is the truest.
Yeah, that now you're assuming that everyone is able to think rationally and has access to the same information, right? I don't think a lot of people think rationally. They think, most people, in fact, if you talk to them, they do not speak logically. If not most, at least some people, right? Let's say if you speak to someone from another religion, if you have a debate, many times they will not speak to you on logical terms, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever experienced that or not.
I think like the first reason why we think that there shouldn't be any war is that we're living in an individualism world, okay? There is individualism every day, everywhere. And we think like, okay, if you have this opinion, it's yours. You shouldn't just communicate it to other people. It's yours and that's okay, okay? And it's not like that, unfortunately. You are looking at the world idealistically. And most of the people that we are calling them wise, that we are assuming that they are pursuing the peace world, that we have to live in a world out of any war and out of anything, and that they are looking at it idealistically. It's impossible. Even at the moment of spreading Islam, we had to have some wars. Okay, after talking to them, after telling them in a peaceful way, there are some group of people who don't accept the truth of this world, okay? And there is no way to get them in the right way. And even we have so many verses in Holy Quran.
So in those occasions where we are going to achieve something beyond what exists right now, maybe war is inevitable. But still, there's too much about war. Let's go for a short break and then we'll be back. Welcome back, dear listeners. So you're listening to Back to Reality, and thank you for joining us. So while we're talking about war, why in this world in which people claim to be so rational, so wise, and be involved and engaged with science and different theories, still they do believe in war?
You know what, I think the form and image that we have from a war is different than what it should be. So the problem is not war itself. It's the image that we are making out of it, okay? It's the way that we are doing it. We are sacrificing the lives of people for this war. The people who are innocent, the people who have nothing to do with the beliefs of two sides, okay? And this is what should be discussed here, that why these innocent people are being sacrificed in wars, okay?
One huge reason that there are wars is because of human greed, selfishness. People know what they're doing is wrong many times. It's not like they're completely ignorant of what they're doing. It's because of their greed and selfishness. Like you mentioned, the wars that we had in Islam at the beginning, it was because those people were unwilling to let go of their sort of ruthless, selfish system, right? If they're willing to do that, there would be no war. When you try to enforce justice, those greedy people that are out there will war with you, and then you're forced to fight with them, right? To enforce justice.
Yeah, that's very true. But, you know, still, this question remains there, that in such a rational world, what could we do to fight war?
So definitely education is one of those things, to educate people, to raise awareness. But like we've said, there are people out there, they know what the right thing is, but because they're greedy, if somebody comes into your house to kill you, you're not going to be able to talk to them. You're not going to sit down and rationalize and say, hey, why are you...
Shake sense into their head.
No, because they are not willing to do that with you. And therefore, you're now... You have to defend yourself. And in Islam, pretty much all wars are defensive wars. We're not told to attack others.
Yeah.
We're
exactly.
not told to
exactly.
like... Yeah.
We've never started a war.
Right, right.
It has been imposed on us. Wherever it has been, it has been imposed on us.
You know, the sentence that I believe in is that you can wake up someone who's asleep, but you cannot wake up someone who pretends to be asleep.
Exactly.
Okay?
Yeah, that's
and
a fact.
Yeah, it's exactly the same for all the wars that happens in the world, especially in the 21st century, that we're living in a world full of wise people, full of philosophers, full of people who claim that they know everything about the systems that is controlling over us. Okay? And the thing that... is the main reason of why wars happens and why people believe that they have to sacrifice something in order to defend whatever they believe is prejudice. Okay?
Yeah. Mm.
And this prejudice is something that is killing people because they have this background about something and they don't want to put themselves in difficulty to go for that. So seek knowledge. As you mentioned, knowledge is the key here. When you have knowledge, you don't have prejudice. And when you are a prejudiced person, you don't have the knowledge about the thing that you even, you yourself believe in, okay?
Exactly.
And this is, I think, why people go for war, because they don't want to go another way, which is seeking knowledge, because it's more difficult. Because it takes time, because it takes energy.
So in order to fight wars, we have to improve our knowledge. And education is the first thing that we have to do. And then another thing that you mentioned, which is too good to think about, is prejudice. So we shouldn't go for the idea that, okay, because of this biased idea that is circling around this topic, so I'm not going to get there or get some new information about it, because I already have set my mind on the fact that what I think about is the truest thing. So we should go for different aspects of each issue that happens around us in order to get a closer connection to the truth itself. Because as you just said, through these propagandas nowadays, maybe finding the truth would be so difficult because everybody has got a way to speak, and maybe some of them know the tricks of the trade, and then they could affect people's idea and the way they think.
I think we must understand how to like read propaganda, how to do sort of fight propaganda. I would say today there's a war, not just a physical war. There's like a mental war, right?
Exactly,
there's a soft war that's going on. So in order to sort of defend ourselves, we have to educate ourselves against that propaganda, educate others. I don't think wars are ever going to go away. As long as there's going to be human beings, there's probably going to be wars, you know? It's not something
as long as there are some powers who want everything for themselves, who want to hoard everything in this world for themselves,
exactly.
Then there is war.
Right. Because, that's one of the other reasons for war is resources, right? People fight over resources, over land, over water, over oil.
Yeah, that's power, generally speaking.
Yeah, so that's not going to go away, unfortunately.
But then there's a tragic part about war that we're going to talk about it after the break. So stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
So, welcome back. This is Back to Reality, and this is actually the last part of today's episode. We're talking about the most excruciating word in the world, that is war. And we came to the most tragic part of the war, that is the innocent people who are getting killed. See, there are some powers fighting over something, and then the victims of this fighting are children, women, and human beings.
Yeah.
Different sort of human beings. I mean, considered to be children, the elderly, the women, even men. As you can see through different wars, there are many stories that we could read in novels and stories, and that is so heart-touching.
You know, my brother mentioned something that as human beings are here, we're going to have war with each other, okay? And I have to, I think, mention that point that after the reappearance of our last infallible, which we believe in it as Mahdism or Mahdaviya, this justice will be overruling this whole world, and no war is going to happen again after...
Yeah.
all these oppressors will be deleted from this world.
We have been promised for that, and we are sure of that to happen. But before that day
We have this hope. We have this hope for this utopia, and this hope is the light that we are seeking for in everyday's life.
Yeah.
Okay. And put that aside. I want to tell you that we are living in a world full of informations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And because of this, maybe some people think that because there are more information, then there is more knowledge. But it's not like that. We are living in a fake world of informations. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's really important to be that wise, to be that clever, to find the right way out of the wrong thing. And I think this day, the definition of faith, the definition of being a human being, is to find the right thing out of all these lies.
Yeah.
And that's it.
So, brother, I have a question about these guys who impose wars on the oppressed people and the innocent people. Don't they have a heart in their chest? Don't they see just the pictures of what they create?
Their hearts have become hard, right? They're no longer feeling those feelings or those empathy that you and I would say as a normal human being is able to feel. And that's the really unfortunate part about war, is that it turns human beings into animals, right?
Yeah. How they justify themselves.
So normally, that's what I'm saying. The justification is either coming through some propaganda or their own selfishness and their desire to be more powerful or gain that thing over. And that's how they're able to justify it to themselves.
Yeah.
A lot of these people, they view other human beings just as animals, right?
Exactly.
And they say it's okay to kill them because other human beings are animals. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we just recently heard, for example, in the war that's taking place in Gaza. Is that the Israelis, they don't have sympathy in their hearts, and their hearts are really hard. We cannot think like they do. That's the other thing.
Exactly.
You and I cannot imagine ourselves, you know, how they're thinking. We can't imagine that.
And that is still so painful. Thank you, both of you.
Thank you.
War is the most painful misery that could happen to any nation. There'd be a lot of loss. There'd be millions of people suffering. But then still, as Sister Bita mentioned, we do believe in the promised Imam to come and to solve all the problems and issues. We do believe in that green future that is about to happen. And it's not going to be that far away. And it's not something that wouldn't happen so quickly. We would just be praying for that day to come, for Imam Mahdi ajalallah farjah to reappear and to be the one who's going to fight for the right of every oppressed person in this world and establish justice everywhere. Thank you for staying with us. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the World with Reporters.
The Iranian embassy in Damascus organized a consultative meeting entitled Israel on the Slope of Fall to discuss the most important repercussions of the Hamas-led Al-Aqsa Float operation against Israel. The Iranian ambassador has expressed his absolute confidence in the victory of the resistance.
The Zionist entity in America were defeated by the resistance in Syria, especially that more than 80 countries got involved and failed. Likewise, the entire Western world waged a battle against Yemen and failed. Victory today is in the hands of the resistance axis.
The Palestinian resistance has proven that it is capable of facing challenges. The Al-Aqsa flood operation is considered a tsunami in military thinking, a marvel in field performance, and a fundamental foundation upon which much can be built in a scientific, objective, and logical manner.
Analysts and experts confirm that the Al-Aqsa flood operation is a historic military epic that imposed a new reality on the Israeli entity and will lead to its demise and the expulsion of the American forces from the region.
As leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, the pure blood of martyr Qasem Soleimani demands the complete expulsion of the Americans from the region.
No regional and Arab country will be able to pressure the resistance to release the prisoners without paying the price.
Participants emphasized the importance of preserving the outcomes of this achievement and consecrating it as a significant victory that signifies a new milestone in the course of the conflict.
Despite any debates over what happened on October the 7th, everyone agrees that Palestinian resistance has destroyed the myth of the invincible Israeli army and that Al-Aqsa Flood operation has initiated the countdown to the end of Israel. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
The Israeli onslaught in Gaza has ignited a wave of protests across Pakistan as people express their anger over the regime's back-to-back attacks on the besieged territory.
Israel would never be able to carry out its inhumanity and its barbarity and its atrocities unless it was helped and funded and supported and weaponized by America, UK, European Union, and I want to condemn the Organization of Islamic Conference for being complicit and silent and inactive.
In response to the ongoing crisis in Gaza, Pakistani citizens are raising their voices to demand an end to the war crimes being committed in the region.
So far, no financial support, no medical support, and no practical food and other necessities have been delivered to the people of Gaza. So there is a catastrophe, there is a humanitarian crisis, war crimes are being committed by Israel.
The Gaza is bleeding and Gaza is being massacred in huge numbers, and we are unable to do anything. We are not even able to give the aid to them, to provide medicine, to provide food, commodities. How they are living in the open sky, and the children are bleeding, children are dying every day.
Meanwhile, the government of Pakistan is responding to the ongoing Israeli aggression by sending its second consignment of relief goods that consisted of hygiene kits, medicines, and food packages.
Like people in many parts of the world, Pakistanis are worried about Israel's constant air attacks on civilians in Gaza. They demand an immediate end to the regime's onslaught. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
As part of a diplomatic dash across West Asia, the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken arrived in Ankara and met with his Turkish counterpart Hakan Fidan. The visit comes one day ahead of the Turkish police raiding pro-Palestinian protesters who tried entering the Incirlik airbase, which hosts U.S. troops with tear gas and water cannons. Demonstrators condemned the U.S. unconditional support for Israel in its aggression against Palestinians, stressing the U.S. is Israel's partner in the genocide taking place in Gaza.
The fierce Israeli attacks against Palestinians are due to the United States' unlimited support to Netanyahu's cabinet. If the U.S. did not support Israel from the first place, we wouldn't see them committing such massacres openly and not even thinking of the consequences. I think the only way a ceasefire or pause can be achieved if the U.S. stops its blind support to the Israeli government in its aggression on Gaza. The United States must use its influence to push for peace, not war. And the huge rallies we've seen in the U.S. and the American public refusing to fund massacres and genocides will push the Biden administration to stop its support to Israel.
In a speech made during his visit to his hometown, Rize, the Turkish president said his country has never left the brothers in Gaza unprotected, helpless and alone, and will never do so. Erdogan said that it is Turkey's duty to protect the holy sites in Jerusalem al-Quds. He added that Israel has taken a very wrongful step by which it has darkened its future.
It is our duty to save our Palestinian brothers from Israeli oppression and to stop the massacres committed in Gaza before the eyes of the world.
Turkey has been strongly condemning Israeli aggression on Gaza, which has killed more than 10,000 Palestinians, most of them women and children. Ankara has withdrawn its ambassador in Israel and strongly condemned the Israeli aggression on Gaza. The country's President Erdogan has also threatened to call Israel a war criminal. But there has still been no clear and official statement on cutting ties with the occupying regime. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
On Monday, a conference called Religions on Peace and War was held at Rome's Luis Guido Carli University, considered one of the most distinguished private research institutes in Italy. The conference, attended by academics and representatives of religious groups, had been presented as an initiative on the positive role religions can play in peacemaking or de-escalating violent conflicts. It turned out to be a meeting absurdly victimizing Israel in the ongoing siege launched on the Gaza Strip, without any regard for the massacre of innocent people who have been under oppression and occupation for decades in Palestine. In addition to that, a number of deceitful statements were presented by some of the conference speakers to the audience.
What I'm saying here is that terrorists used violence on Israeli people on October 7, going to their homes and chopping the heads off kids and killing women after abusing them. Saying that Israel upholds the Palestinians in a state of apartheid is out of context. What's happening in former Palestine is Palestinians' responsibility.
UN experts and a number of human rights organizations, including Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, have argued for years that apartheid is being practiced by Israel in the occupied Palestinian territories. One of the speakers and some students from the audience pointed out that the reconstruction of the events occurred in Palestine made by the president of the Jewish community was totally biased.
The role of religions is also to promote dialogue in order to find solutions. The issue here is that mutual recognition must be the starting point. The previous speaker called the disputed territories former Palestine. How can you call them that way? There is no former Palestine. There is Palestine and there are Palestinians. We won't go anywhere if we continue this way.
At no time during the conference, it was mentioned that over 10,000 Palestinian civilians and more than 4,000 children have been slaughtered so far after 4 weeks of Israeli bombardment on the besieged Gaza Strip. One of the issues that have been raised during the conference is how Western countries are showcasing a very selective morality in choosing the conflicts where they express outrage and claiming their universal values. In the same way, for decades, the West has had a selective and biased approach to the implementation of international law. Max Civili, Rome.
As Israel intensifies its military operation in Gaza, public sentiment in Pakistan has shifted sharply against companies and brands that are perceived to be pro-Israel or pro-America. Social media campaigns have been launched calling for a boycott of popular international brands like McDonald's, KFC, Pizza Hut, Coke, Pepsi, and many others. Influencers and public figures are using their platforms to urge people to refrain from purchasing from these companies, which are seen as supportive of Israel and the United States.
To demonstrate our support for Palestinians, we can impose bans on products from companies that are directly or indirectly backing Israel. I urge people worldwide to rise beyond religious or national differences and stand together in the name of humanity by boycotting pro-Israeli and pro-American companies.
The ongoing war on Gaza has fueled a wave of anger and frustration among Pakistanis who view these companies as complicit in the violence and suffering of Palestinians.
By refusing to purchase products from companies that support Israel, we can show our solidarity with Palestinians and contribute to their cause. Let's unite in the face of this humanitarian crisis and send a powerful message by boycotting companies that contribute to the suffering of the Palestinians.
As a result of this boycott, the sales of pro-Israeli companies in Pakistan have witnessed a record decline in recent weeks.
Ever since the boycott campaign started, we have noticed a significant drop in sales of the US and Israeli-made products. Customers are increasingly avoiding products that are associated with the United States or Israel, and it's impacting our business. The boycott has really hit us hard. People are not buying these products anymore. They prefer local products.
In response, these businesses are actively leveraging social media to try to recover their market share and restore their public image.
The call for a boycott of pro-Israeli companies is a testament to the deep empathy and concern of Pakistanis for the plight of Palestinian people and their desire to contribute to a resolution of the conflict. Nasser Kazmi, Islamabad.
Supporters of Palestine rallied in Seoul on Saturday as the Israeli regime's indiscriminate air and ground assault on Gaza rages on. Those from the region tried to put the current conflict into context.
Killings, displacement, and mass arrests in the West Bank are not new. While we are seeing an intensification in these kinds of attacks at the current moment, we know that this is a demonstration of life under the occupation.
South Koreans are getting the message as news of Israeli bombings of hospitals and schools, termed by many as war crimes, has traveled around the world.
Civilians are dying brutally. The U.S. and Israel have rejected UN-proposed humanitarian aid. It was a humanitarian truce to bring aid into Gaza, but the United States and Israel vetoed it.
Experts say social media has been critical in communicating the reality of events mass media reported with bias.
The media coverage is pretty asymmetrical, especially here. It is very difficult to know the real voices from Palestinians. However, concerned citizens and civic organizations translate a lot of articles, so we were still able to make the voices heard.
As Palestinian supporters marched toward the Israeli embassy, police blocked their pre-approved route, apparently at the request of the Israeli embassy. Meanwhile, another rally in support of Palestine started up nearby.
The solidarity with Palestine expressed here in South Korea and on the streets around the world is having something of an effect. The unconditional backing of Israel among its allies, in particular the U.S., is declining amid these resounding demands for a ceasefire. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Stricken by grief for innocent Palestinian lives that have been cut short. Dreams perished, generations wiped out in Israel's brutal bombing campaign in Gaza.
Thousands of kids are dying. Thousands. Innocent. There's an unborn child there, my friend. Unborn.
I think we're witnessing a genocide, personally, and there's nothing else that we can do but get out here and make our voices heard, because our government doesn't represent us on this.
They're killing innocents, children, women, everyone.
It's the fourth pro-Palestine mass demonstration in as many weeks, bringing together people of different religious backgrounds. Glenn Secker is the National Secretary for the Jewish Voice for Labor in London.
What we think is happening is unbelievably atrocious. It's
a gross violation of human rights, they're war crimes, and what's happening now actually is genocide.
For the fourth Saturday in a row, Britons here in the UK have taken to the streets to protest Israel's ongoing slaughter in Gaza. Here in London, they're calling not only for an immediate ceasefire, but also on the government to withdraw its support for the Israeli regime.
They also asked for the root causes of the decades-old conflict to be addressed.
And that is Israel's ongoing military occupation, imposition of apartheid, and our government's complicity in supporting that system of oppression. And that must end.
A protest was also supposed to take place outside the Israeli embassy, but was cancelled by police under the controversial public orders legislation.
Yeah, it's a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace. They'll protect the government that's committing horrific war crimes and not allow people to speak their minds. And no doubt the police will crack down in a brutal way if anything gets too big.
In other European cities, too, demonstrators got their voices heard, despite government restrictions. Organizers here say there are more marches planned for the coming weeks. Will the people in power heed the call that so many here are making for an end to the bloodshed? Saeed Pourreza, London.
After nearly a month of bans on pro-Palestinian demonstrations around France, a march across Paris to denounce Israel's shocking atrocities in Gaza was finally permitted. Activists have endured mass arrests, a record number of fines, the usual French police brutality, and more, but many say it's nothing compared to what Gazans are being forced to endure.
Israel has to start respecting international law. They must stop these massacres and bombardments. Everyone in the world, including in Tel Aviv, must get out and demonstrate right now against this imperialism which victimizes everybody it touches.
Tens of thousands of people flooded the streets with intense anger at President Emmanuel Macron's seemingly unconditional support for Tel Aviv, despite the massacre of nearly 10,000 people, 70% of them women and children.
Israel and the West want to colonize and dominate the entire Arab world, but that time is over. Palestine's time for freedom is now. I blame the corrupt Arab puppets and collaborators, like in Morocco, Egypt, Jordan, and Bahrain. But let's not leave out our own president.
France has an extremely large Lebanese community, and many of them marched for what they said are obvious reasons.
I'm a Lebanese Christian, and we know that the Palestinian cause is also the cause of Lebanon as well. If Gaza falls, it's certain that Israel would come after us next, because that is the expansionist nature of Zionism.
4 years ago, Macron forced through a bill which attempted to equate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, despite the obvious differences between the two. This week, a group of French senators introduced a bill which would make any anti-Zionism a felony crime, punishable by at least a year in jail. Macron has finally joined global calls for a truce and also announced that an international humanitarian conference will be held in Paris on November 9th to coordinate aid for the Palestinians. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Fears the United Kingdom is heading for a recession this winter have intensified amid signs that British households are cutting spending as they save for Christmas and higher fuel bills. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Press Association, PA Media, has covered this story and tells us more. Fears of rising energy bills and a particularly expensive Christmas led consumers to rein in their spending in October, as 14% say they have already made mutual agreements to cut back on gift-giving, figures show. Card spending rose by just 2.6% year-on-year last month, the smallest uplift since last September, according to a Barclays report. Spending on essential items also slowed from last month's 4.6% annual increase to 3.9%, largely down to easing food price inflation, but also driven by 69% of consumers continuing to look for ways to cut the cost of their grocery bill. Amid the heightened price sensitivity, some 70% of shoppers reported noticing a trend known as